If you would be turning to Psalm 90. There is a God, and he is not me, and he is not you. You may be thinking, well, duh, but our actions and attitudes can actually say otherwise concerning how we think. It kind of reminds me of something that happened when we first moved here to Missouri. I went out on my front porch, and on the porch was a spider, and when the spider saw me, it came running up at me, and then it reared up. And I was amazed. I had never seen a spider that aggressive before. And I looked down at that little thing, and I said, "Just who do you think you are?" And then I stepped on it. Well, I think like that spider, we sometimes get a little too big for our britches. And that's something that we're going to see in this psalm. Well, the ancient heading, it says, "A prayer of Moses, the man of God," and I don't see any reason to doubt it. Now, Moses, of course, he was the leader of Israel out of their Egyptian bondage. And we do find other psalms that Moses wrote, like in the text of Exodus 15 and Deuteronomy 32. Now, if that is the case, okay, and he really was the author of Psalm 90, well, that means that this is the oldest composition in the book of Psalms. Because Moses, you know, he arrived on the scene about 500 years before King David. Well, the heading calls it a prayer, and of course, many of the Psalms are prayers. And like many prayers, this one includes praise of God, confession of sin, and then petition for God's blessings. Three things that I think should often be found in our prayers. Well, last week we looked at the 12 spies in Numbers chapter 13. And you remember that they were two very different perspectives. And we might say that 10 of the spies, they saw big people and a little God. Whereas two of the spies, Joshua and Caleb, they saw big people, but they saw an even bigger God. Well, like Joshua and Caleb, Moses had a very big view of God. So, number one, we have praise of God in verses 1 through 6. And I've asked Ken to go ahead and read again this week. Everyone talked about how great his voice is. "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's voice." Come on up here, Ken.
Again, Psalms 90, 1 through 6. "Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting. You are God. You turn men back to dust, saying, 'Return to dust, O sons of men.' For 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. You sweep men away in the sleep of death. They are like the new grass of the morning. Though in the morning it springs up new, by evening it is dry and withered."
Well, looking at verse 1, you'll notice that this psalm is addressed to the Lord, okay, using the word Adonai. It basically means master, and it shows God's position as the one who has authority. He is the sovereign ruler. He is the Lord of lords, Deuteronomy 10:17. He is the Lord of all the earth, Joshua 3:11. And specifically, he has authority and power over his people. He is their master. He sets the rules. Okay, he's the one who has the authority to reward or to punish. We need to see him as that. Because I think it's very easy to start thinking that we are Lord. Now, it's difficult to know, but this psalm is often thought to have been written either toward the end of Moses' time in Midian, and that's when the Israelites were still in captivity in Egypt, or toward the close of the 40 years of wilderness wandering. So the point is, during either of those times, Israel didn't have a permanent residence, okay, but they did have God. Joseph of Rotherham, he said it like this: "A dwelling place comes with particular pathos," speaking of emotions, "from a homeless sojourner belonging to a homeless race. A sense of being at home with God impresses the writer with the divine kindness in drawing so near to him, and at the same time brings him into conscious fellowship with the men of the past, to whom the sovereign Lord had in like manner drawn near." You know, referring to the all generation statement. He's been there for man in all periods of human history. Now, this may be a little difficult for us. We live in the United States of America, okay, a very prosperous, very wealthy nation. It's one that's been around for over 240 years. But do you and I think of God as our true dwelling place? And many of the Psalms talk about this. For example, the next Psalm, Psalm 91, begins by saying, "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. For it is He who delivers you from the snare of the trapper and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His pinions, and under His wings you may seek refuge. His faithfulness is a shield and bulwark." And I really like the way that it's put in Psalm 71. "In you, O Lord, I have taken refuge. Let me never be ashamed. In your righteousness, deliver me and rescue me. Incline your ear to me and save me. Be to me a rock of habitation to which I may continually come. You have given commandment to save me, for you are my rock and my fortress." Now think about it this way. Of course, there are exceptions, but for most of us, when we think of our home, we think of it as a place of refuge and safety. Our home is a place where we find our most cherished and enduring relationships. Our home is a place of sustenance and rejuvenation, where we eat, we sleep, we watch Netflix. Our home is a place we remember fondly when we are away, and so we rush to it when we are free. Why is 5 o'clock traffic such a pain? Well, it's because everyone's trying to get home. So, is that how you and I feel about God? Well, going off the all generations comment, verse 2, it talks about how God has been around forever. You know, before the mountains were born, mountains, often the oldest things we can think of, or at least that's how we perceive them. Or you gave birth to the earth and the world. And earth, that's usually speaking of the planet itself, and the world is referring usually to the inhabitants of the planet, the world of men. See, these things, they're not the result of a great cosmic accident. Well, they're the result of God. But the point is, even from everlasting to everlasting, you are God, before and after time. So think of a timeline with eternity on each end. Now, He's never been young, He's never been old. And you remember in Exodus 3:14, God revealed Himself to Moses at the burning bush as the I Am. He is infinite, no beginning or end, original, one of a kind. And behind everything, He depends on nothing for His existence, and everything else depends upon Him for existence. And then verses 3 through 6, there's this comparison between God and man, and it should be pretty humbling to human pride. The frail, temporary nature of humans, it becomes very clear when it's contrasted with God. Now, notice in verse 3, that it's God doing these things, not Mother Nature, not Gaia, or something like that. At the fall of man in the Garden of Eden, God announced that man would return to the dust from which he was made, Genesis 3:19. And of course, you've got no choice, right? It doesn't matter how much Botox you use, it doesn't matter how much plastic surgery you get, you've got to yield to God's verdict to return to the dust. And we're then reminded that time, it's not the same for him. You know, the passing of time is really of little consequence when viewed from eternity. Now, to us, 1,000 years, that's pretty significant. You think of all the nations that have come and gone in the last 1,000 years. Think of all the things that have been invented. Think of all the discoveries in the last 1,000 years and so forth. Well, to God, they're like yesterday when it passes by, or a watch in the night. And the ancient Jews, they divided the night into 3 different watches, and the Romans, they later divided into 4. A portion of the night, now that seems to go by pretty fast. And so, well, you might think of the Civilization video games, where you're playing through just thousands of years of history in a short amount of time. Now, maybe some of you have played those. We find similar language in 2 Peter 3:8. "But do not let this one fact escape your notice, beloved, that with the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years like one day. Now, the context there is the second coming of Christ. See, what may seem like a long time to us, like waiting for the second coming, no, that's nothing to God. The passing of time, it doesn't in any way affect the performance of God's promises. I mean, it's not as if God's going to forget what he said he would do or something like that. And of course, we're then given the illustration of a flood. And when I was living in Colorado, I used to really enjoy going inner tubing down the Animas River. And it just very slowly meanders along. You just relax as you sit there getting a sunburn and, you know, splashing the people who go by in the rafts and the things like that. But, you know, I wouldn't dare go inner tubing during a flood or even during peak snowmelt. When, man, it's just the water, it's just an amazing amount of water. It's just barreling past. Have you ever seen, hopefully just on TV, what a flood can do? How fast things can be destroyed and carried away? Well, that's the illustration. There's the sweeping away of the masses of people as if in a flood. You see them and they're gone. Well, some people, they think this next figure here, they fall asleep. And that's maybe that's speaking of how fast time passes while we're sleeping. But then other people, it's probably just a euphemism for death. You know, the previous figure of the floods being continued. In other words, human beings, they're born, they quickly die. They're swept away in the sleep of death. Well, the next illustration is that our lives are like the grass. Now, one thing I've learned about living in Missouri, there's a lot of things that Missouri cannot do, but one thing it can is grow grass. And we're thinking here, not Missouri, but, you know, in other places, you know, it bursts into life, but very quickly wilts in the burning sun. It's pretty for a little while, but then it doesn't last. And we're the same way, don't we? We wither. As it's been said, time is a great healer, but a poor beautician. Well, John Perrone is speaking of the hot eastern countries, and he said, "In the east, one night's rain works a change as if by magic. The field at evening was brown, parched, arid as a desert. In the morning, it is green with the blades of grass. The scorching wind blows upon it, and again before evening, it is withered." That's us. And so man is finite, but God is infinite. Man is limited, but God is unlimited. Man has a short time, but God is timeless. Man is weak and frail, but God has all power. And so we need to keep in mind that we are not God, and therefore we need to be very careful, I think, when trying to judge his methods of doing things by our own. See, always keep in mind that we are looking from an extremely limited vantage point. So number two, punishment from God, verses 7 through 12.
"We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. The length of our days is 70 years, or 80, if we have the strength. Yet their span is but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For your wrath is as great as the fear that is due you. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom."
What is it that brings God's wrath and anger? I mean, it's very simple, our sins. So is this section just speaking of God's general punishment of man because of the fall in Genesis chapter 3? You know, we die. Or is this speaking of something more specific, like the Egyptian slavery or the wilderness wanderings? I mean, their lives would certainly be shortened because of slave labor. And it seems that God shortened their lifespans during the wilderness wanderings. That generation was to die in the wilderness. You know, Aaron lived to be 123. Moses lived to be 120. But you remember that the Israelites who were 20 years old and older, they were condemned to die during the 40 years of wilderness wanderings because that generation lacked faith and because they refused to enter the promised land. Now, that means that a 20-year-old would not live beyond 60. A 30-year-old would not live beyond 70. Now, they might die before that, but they might die sooner, but not later than that. And if that's what the passage is talking about, it sounds as if none of them were living much past 80. I don't know. Now, verse 8, it reveals something that's very important for all of us to remember. Okay, you have placed our iniquities before you, our secret sins, in the light of your presence. God, He sees and He knows everything about us. He knows our public as well as our private sins, every one of them. In Hebrews chapter 4, verse 13, it says, "There is no creature hidden from His sight, but all things are open and laid bare to the eyes of Him with whom we have to do." You know, in Matthew chapter 10, Jesus told us that the very hairs of our head are numbered. He knows more about you than you know about yourself. It's usually somewhere around 100,000, I've read, so good luck with trying to count them. It's a bit less for some of you, I see. As it's been said, there are really only three different hairstyles, parted, unparted, and departed. But anyway, Granville Kleiser, he wrote a pretty good poem called "You Can't Fool God." You can fool the hapless public. You can be a subtle fraud. You can hide your little meanness, but you can't fool God. You can advertise your virtues. You can self-achievement laud. You can load yourself with riches, but you can't fool God. You can criticize the Bible. You can be a selfish clod. You can lie, swear, drink, and gamble, but you can't fool God. You can magnify your talent. You can hear the world applaud. You can boast yourself somebody, but you can't fool God. See, man to man or woman to woman, yeah, we look okay. But next to God, well, that's a different story. Well, going on, verses 9 and 10, it might be seen as Israel in the desert, and they're speaking, "For all our days have declined in your fury. We have finished our years like a sigh or a whisper." There's not much to it, and it's quickly gone without a trace. Well, the NIV translates it a little bit differently. "We finish our years with a moan, as if it wasn't the best end." Well, verse 10, "As for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years." And that, you know, that's nothing in comparison to God. Now, 70 or 80 years, that might seem pretty long when you're young. But to the elderly, it can seem pretty short. Or so I'm told. Well, time, it definitely does. It goes faster the older you get. That's the way it feels. I mean, can you believe in a couple of weeks we're going to be in 2020? Life has plenty of limitations, and one of those is the length, and especially if it's shortened. R. Tuck, you made the comment, "Man's utter helplessness in the presence of early death makes this form of judgment especially humiliating. To conquer, rise above, mate and master everything is man's supreme passion. Early death is God, it may be the neglected God, mastering him. Yet their pride is but labor and sorrow, for soon it is gone and we fly away." And that would certainly fit with the wilderness wanderings. But it also kind of sounds like the message of the book of Ecclesiastes. You know, most of the things in this life, it's just striving after wind. And that book finishes by saying the conclusion, after looking at all the dead ends in life, the conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. We fly away. You know, we depart from this world to take up residence in the next. As a bird flies from one resting place to another. In verse 11, it asks, "Who understands the power of your anger and your fury according to the fear that is due you?" The ancient Israelites, they didn't get it. Very few do. And there are times in my life when I don't get it. See, as human beings with our selfish nature that's been stained by sin, we tend to forget God's holy and righteous nature and how badly we miss God's standards. We start thinking we're not so bad. And so death, that should be a great reminder of that fact. The reason that we die is because of sin, Genesis chapter 3. And especially their shortened lifespans during that time. See, sadly, in our minds, we often try to bring God down to our level and make a one-sided study of it. You know, we start thinking and rationalize that, hey, you know, we're not so bad. People have a hard time understanding the intensity of the divine displeasure with sin. Sin is a big deal. It sent Jesus to the cross. Well, I believe verse 12, this is the main verse of the psalm, one verse we really ought to memorize. Numbering our days. So that means we need to get a good watch. That means we need to get one of those good calendar apps on our phone. No. Now, that may not be a bad idea. But the point is that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. Proverbs 9:10, it says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And that brings us back to the fear mentioned in verse 11. See, in the scriptures, fear is often speaking of reverence and respect. As of today, I have lived 15,560 days. I went to one of those websites that'll calculate it for you. I really wonder how many of those days that I've used wisely. According to the average life expectancy. Well, anyway, that means that I'm about halfway done. But I certainly don't know that. And neither do you. I could actually be 99% done. So could you. We need the proper perspective. And we need to make it count. See, at the end of each day, I think we ought to ask, how did I do today? And am I ready? The fact is, we don't know how much time we got left. And you might die of old age, or you might get a certain disease where you have so many months to get your house in order. Then again, you might end up in a natural disaster, or be given the wrong prescription, or get hit by a drunk driver, or a stray bullet, or have a fatal heart attack, or simply fall off a ladder and land wrong. It happens all the time. The cemeteries are filled with the old and the young. Yesterday, a 14-year-old girl in Phelps County died in an RTV accident. Maybe you saw that. Since this is always a possibility, are we using each day wisely and living our lives in the fear of the Lord? The clock of life is wound but once, and no one has the power to tell just when the hands will stop, at late or early hour. To lose one's wealth is sad indeed. To lose one's health is more. To lose one's soul is such a loss that no man can restore. Now is the only time you own, so live, love, toil with a will. Place no trust in the morrow, for the clock may then be still. Robert H. Smith. In Ephesians 5, Paul put it like this. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. Moses prayed, teach us to number our days, that we may present to you a heart of wisdom. Number three, we've got petition to God, verses 13 through 17.
Relent, O Lord, how long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord, our God, rest upon us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands.
Amen. Thank you, Ken. And so, this section is asking for God's mercy and pity, you know, for him to return from his anger and reverse those present circumstances. Look, we messed up, and we want to be back in a right relationship with you. See, be sorry for your servants. Think better of us. And of course, at that time, his servants would be the nation of Israel, and today, it's his church. Well, looking at verse 14, The wilderness wanderings, they were like the night, and Moses, he longed to see the dawn of mercy. And this comes from being in a right relationship with God. Peace and gratitude and rejoicing, wonderful things. And it sounds as if verse 15 is asking for the same amount of time. So 40 years of punishment, and so 40 years of favor. And of course, it would be longer if this is the Egyptian bondage. Let your work appear to your servants, you know, like the Exodus and like the conquest of Canaan, just exciting times. And your majesty to their children. Now, I'd say that good parents, they want their children to know God better than they do and receive more blessings from God than they do. And look at verse 17. See, all their hopes were tied into taking possession of the promised land, which of course they did. But what about the work of our hands and our serving him? Well, Ephesians 3 and verse 20, now to him who is able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us. So don't leave God out of the equation. He's the same God. And one way that he will do this is when our work, verse 17, is his work, verse 16. Are we about the Lord's work? And so like Moses, let's continually pray that the favor of the Lord our God be upon us. What are some of the lessons, then, that we can learn from this psalm? Let me just give you a quick bullet list here. We need to learn that we are the creation and not the creator. We need to learn that this world is not our home. God is. We need to learn just how uncertain and short our life is. We need to learn that we cannot hide our sins from God. We need to learn the power of God's anger against our sin and learn the fear of the Lord. We need to learn to make the most of the short time given to us. And we need to learn just how much we need God. There is a God, and he is not me. I like what Eddie Clower said about this passage. No one has appropriately considered his life unless he has seen it as frail, sinful, and under God's judgment. Life is tentative and comparatively brief. No promise of tomorrow has been given. The person who recognizes the way it is here is in a position to live his life wisely in anticipation of the way it is going to be in eternity. The person who ignores the nature of life here is foolish and lives his life in a make-believe situation that has no real future. Why do we like superhero movies so much? Why do the superhero movies do so well? And the Star Wars movies where people, they can, you know, use the Force and stuff like that. How come? Well, let me offer this possibility. I think it's because we like the idea of having power and control, because in reality, we don't have much on our own. God is the one with the power and the control, not us. And so here's the thing. If there is so little that we can control, doesn't it make sense then to rest in the arms of the one who does have the control, who controls everything? We are indeed so frail. Oh, a little virus can take us out. A virus that we have to measure in nanometers, that can take us out. And if through, genetics, diet, and exercise, and other lifestyle choices, we're able to live longer than most, we're still just postponing the inevitable. And so I'd like to finish with this saying I've heard before. Make sure your time counts for eternity so that in eternity you can have a great time.